At the opening of the 20th century, there were five great Western empires: the British, French, Russian, German, and Austro-Hungarian, and two emerging great powers, Japan and the United States. By century's end, all the empires had disappeared. How did they perish? By war. All of them. The Austro-Hungarian Empire was crushed in World War I and torn to pieces at Versailles, where Germany was also dismembered. A vengeful Reich then began a second European war. Ruin was total. Japan, believing its empire was being extorted, its place in the sun denied, attacked America, and was smashed like no other nation in history. The British and French empires already bled in the trenches of the Western Front from August 1914 to November 1918, did not long survive Hitler's war. Russia's empire, dismantled by the Kaiser in 1918, was restored by Lenin's Bolsheviks, driven by traditional Russian imperialism and a new fighting faith, communism. The Soviet empire expanded until its reach was global. Overextended, bankrupt, exhausted by a 50-year struggle against a U.S.-led West that far surpassed the communist bloc in economic power and technological prowess, it collapsed after a crisis of faith and a loss of will to maintain its rule over subjected peoples who had grown to hate it. America survives as the sole superpower because it stayed out of the slaughter pens until the other great powers had fought themselves near to death and avoided a cataclysmic clash with a nuclear-armed Soviet Russia. In World War I, Americans did not go into combat in great numbers until 1918. In World War II, America did not cross the channel until 4 years after France had fallen and 3 years after the Soviet Union had begun fighting for its life. We did not go to war against Japan until the Japanese army had been bogged down for 4 years, fighting a no-win war against the most populous nation on Earth. U.S. casualties in the two world wars were thus the smallest of the great powers, and America, in the 20th century, has never known the vast destruction that was visited on Russia, Germany, and Japan, or even on France and England. Yet today, America's leaders are reenacting every folly that brought these great powers to ruin, from arrogance and hubris to assertions of global hegemony to imperial overreach to trumpeting new crusades to handing out war guarantees to regions and countries where Americans have never fought before. We are piling up the kinds of commitments that produced the greatest disasters of the 20th century. That is why I have written this book. Not for 50 years have Americans had to think deeply about our foreign policy. It was made for us by Tojo, Hitler, Stalin, Castro, Ho, and Mao. For 50 years, America overcame enemies who either attacked us or declared our destruction to be their highest ambition. "We will bury you," Khrushchev said. We took him at his word and buried them. In the last days of the Cold War, something happened. Soviet propagandist Georgi Arbatov said, "We are going to do the worst thing we can do to you. We are going to take your enemy away from you." And so they did. And so we have had to face the question asked in the war movies of our youth: what are we going to do, Joe, when this is all over? Saddam Hussein's invasion of Kuwait briefly gave us a new Hitler and George Bush an opportunity to smash Iraq and to declare the building of a new world order to be America's next crusade. But the nation did not buy in. After the Gulf War triumph, it turned its back on Bush, giving 37% of the vote to a president whose approval 18 months earlier had stood at 91%. As in the 1920s, Americans have tuned out foreign affairs and tuned in the stock market and the scandals. But as the good times of the 1920s ended, the Depression decade, and World War II, the 21st century will not leave America serene in its preeminence. Already, enemies collude against what they consider intolerable American hegemony. This is a fundamental question any foreign policy must answer. What will we fight for? What are the vital interests for which America will sacrifice the blood of its young? With our great enemy gone, the answer is not a simple one, for we Americans disagree on what our vital interests are, what our role in the world should be, and whom we should defend. Without some new foreign peril, America is never going to know again the unity we knew in World War II and the early decades of the Cold War. It may be naive to believe we can ever again have a foreign policy that unites this divided and disputatious people. Nevertheless, we must try, for foreign policy is the shield of the Republic. Blunders here can be as fateful as they were for the other great empires and nations of the 20th century. The purpose of this book, then, is to revisit the history of American foreign policy, its successes, triumphs, and failures. From that history, we can expose the myths and identify the true traditions upon which we can build and the lessons from which we can draw to offer a foreign policy for a new century that might unite most of us and ensure that America endures the greatest republic in history. As Patrick Henry said, only the lamp of experience can guide our way. And the need for a course correction is urgent, for while little discussion or dissent, America has undertaken the most open-ended and extravagant commitments in history. With the expansion of NATO, we have undertaken the defense of Eastern Europe forever, as well as Central Europe from Norway to Turkey. American troops are, for the first time in history, policing the Balkans. We have undertaken the dual containment of Iraq and Iran and the ground and naval defense of the Persian Gulf. These new war guarantees have been added to old Cold War commitments to the security of Israel in a hostile Arab world, to defense of Korea, Japan, Australia, and CETO-packed nations of South Asia, not to mention every Latin American member state of the Rio Pact. Voices can even be heard in Washington asserting a vital U.S. interest in preventing Russia and Iran from dominating the South Caucasus. U.S. war guarantees to Poland today, and Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, and Romania tomorrow may seem costless, painless, and popular, but so did England's guarantee of Belgium's neutrality in 1839, which dragged Britain into the Great War, cost it hundreds of thousands of dead, and inflicted on the empire a wound from which it would never recover. Our country is today traveling the same path that was trod by the British Empire to the same fate. Do we want America to end that way? Finally, a quote from Frederick the Great. He who wants to defend everything defends nothing, and he who wants to be everyone's friend has no friends in the end. This was a quote from A Republic, Not an Empire by Patrick J. Buchanan. Thank you for watching Keith Knight, Don't Tread on Anyone, and the Libertarian Institute.